Okay, we still got 7 minutes, huh? You got any question? Huh? You can ask. Anybody else who is new today? Huh? Apart from John Suilun and the wife. No, the rest are here before. Are they very easy? Huh? Okay. Okay, I have written something. Huh? Over the banner there. Yeah? The first six is actually a repeat of here, huh? The benefits of meditation. Yeah? But below, they got a first turning wisdom, second turning wisdom, third turning wisdom. Yeah? These are the three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. Yeah? So the first type of wisdom is Sutamaya Panya, second type of wisdom is Chintamaya Panya, then the third type is Bhavana Maya Panya. So if you are familiar with the Pali term, you will understand what those type of wisdom are. I will explain it later. Then in the teaching, they always quote the bottom three. You always hear this in the monk's talk or in the logo of certain Buddhist society, especially Brickfield Mahavihara. You see these three words, Pariyatti, Patipatti, and Pativeda. Yeah. So the Buddha said, these are the way you cultivate. The first one is Pariyatti. He called it the learning of the teaching or the doctrine. So last time, the way you learn is, you have to listen to the sutta or the discourse that the Buddha spoke. Then nowadays we are more lucky. We got printed media, notes, CD, everything. You can listen and read. We got textbook. We got Dhamma books. So the learning of the doctrine now is a lot easier. Even if you miss the talk, you can listen to the recording. Yeah? Then there are books available. Yeah. But the disadvantage is you must know how to filter them. Last time, you won't go wrong because only the Buddha spoke. So then Ananda repeat. So you don't have all this other type of commentary or explanation. Sometimes may not be so precise or authentic. So after you have learned the doctrine, the Buddha said, you have understood what the teaching is, then only you can put it into cultivation. He called Patipatti. So Patipatti is the cultivation of the doctrine or the teaching, how you put it into practice. Then how you develop that wisdom or understanding that you need so that you can understand life and live life. Then the last one is Pativeda. Pativeda is the friction that arises through the practice. After you have cultivated what he has taught you and you have developed the wisdom, so the friction of cultivation is very beautiful and you look forward to this day, Sarah, so that you understand life and you know how to live life, and the friction can make so much difference to your life, can transform you completely, yeah? Character-wise, personality-wise, understanding-wise. That's how you become a totally transformed human being or living being. Then because of that, you start to understand life differently. Then you start to appreciate every moment of conscious living and the good life, or they call it the noble life. So life become meaningful, life become happy, peaceful. Then you don't have to suffer anymore, no more misery. Nothing in this world can make you unhappy or miserable. So the fruition of it is the ultimate aim of all Buddhist practitioner. Yeah. So these are all related. Yeah. So later on, if I have time, yeah, when I go through the talk, yeah, we can discuss this. Then I can elaborate on it. We are still early. Yeah? A few more minutes. Then after that, maybe yeah, there is a request actually for tonight's session. Yeah? I think Monica texts me. Then I find it quite useful. So she said, "Radio, can you please tonight?" He said, "Immediately after the puja, just have a 15 minutes of meditation. Then we discuss on the talk that I gave at the recent international seminar in Bangkok on life management with meditation." So this topic is very relevant to you all because it involves understanding life. It's only after you understand life, then you know how to live. Then only we can talk about managing our life. So to them, is if they know how to manage their life, they're already very happy. So that's why in the hypnosis to us is that even though they say you cannot be enlightened, but at least you develop the understanding to manage your life better. They are very contented with that. But the teaching that the Buddha has given us actually can take you beyond that. It can give rise to the wisdom or the understanding that can enable you to become enlightened. And it can liberate your mind. Then you can really be free from all suffering. And you will become a totally transformed human being. And you will become a blessing to all. Okay, maybe another 1-2 minutes. After that, we can start. I just have to add in the title. Okay, so we can start. So as usual, compose your mind. Develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching so that your mind become very calm, very composed and very peaceful. Then pay respect mindfully. You try to look at the author at the back. Sui An has added a lot more. Since the Bangkok trip, he saw a lot of good, what they call the young monk. We call it in Cantonese Wo Xiong Zai, or the young, very cute Buddhist monk. Then there are some good images too. So it can enhance your faith. Then it can help you to develop the spiritual sadha or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. So this faith is very useful, very important for you to develop a very stable mind so that you can receive the teaching, so that you can understand the teaching easily. You need to have a very composed, very calm mind that has a lot of confidence in the people whom you are going to learn from, especially the Buddha, through knowing how special he is, how wonderful his teaching is. Okay, we will do that. So now we compose our mind, then we pay respect, then we will do the salutation followed by the pre-puja. Okay, we will recite the salutation to the Buddha. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Dutiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Tatiyampi Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi Pānātipātā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Adinadana viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Kāmesu micchācarā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Musāvādā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Sūrāmeraya majjhāpamādathāna viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Keep your respect mindfully to Lord Buddha. Then we start. Okay, very good evening to all, brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Just relax yourself, then we can start. For those who just came in, there is a note, a copy of the note. You try to get them. It's here, Suyan. I think pass to those who just came in. Just pass around. Afterwards, we are going through this note because Monica has made a special request. Never mind. Even you have, you still use it because afterwards we are going to follow this format. Okay, what was suggested was good. Monica suggested after the pre-puja, we have about 15 minutes of silent meditation. So today I'm not going to give you any instruction because the talk can actually explain to you clearly what this teaching and meditation is all about and how you can develop them, and it's a lot clearer. You need to understand, like I always say, always remember, you must understand what is meditation, otherwise you cannot do. You must do with understanding. You don't just do because people do, you follow, then you don't learn, because if you don't understand what that thing is, you cannot do. Understand? So meditation is about understanding what you are doing. Then only you can develop it. So this is a very useful subject. Like just now I explained, it talks about life management via meditation following the Dhamma way or the teaching of the Buddha. So meditation is a very useful component that can actually transform you, that can transform your mind so that you can develop the understanding of life, so that you know how to live life. Because the topic they wanted to discuss is life management. How do you manage your life using the benefits of meditation? Then I add in this last part, following the teaching of the Buddha or following the Dhamma way, so that you can have a complete understanding of what life is. Because in order to understand life, you really need to study this teaching and cultivate it. Then when you understand, then only you can talk about how you can cope with life. Then only you can talk about how to plan your life, to manage your life. Then we talk about understanding life. Then only we deal with the meaning and purpose of life. Otherwise, you cannot go into all these things. If you don't even understand life, you ask yourself the question, who is living? Then how do you live life? If you don't know who you are, then who is living your life? If you don't know what is life, how can you live life? So these are the very important questions that people often fail to inquire into. And because they fail to inquire into, they fail to understand what is life. That's why the Buddha said, living beings suffer a lot because of this delusion and ignorance. So later on, when I go in, we discuss it. You can ask me any question. Then this very good foundation will help you a lot in all of your future endeavor to understand life and to develop this meditation. So now we will just do the meditation. So meditation is very simple. Learn to silence your mind. Relax body and mind. Don't think. Just silence. See whether you can do it or not. For those who are familiar, who has been coming and training even at home, I think it's quite easy. But for those who are new, you just experiment with what you can do for the next 15 minutes. You just tell yourself, I'm here to meditate, okay? So you just relax body and mind and silence everything. If you cannot become silent because your head there a lot of thinking or distraction, then try to maintain your awareness within your heart area. Stay with your heart. If it's away from the brain, then you won't think so much. Then later I will explain. Okay, now we are off the light. Then you can start your meditation. Then maybe in about 15 minutes time, I will ring the bell. Then we can start the second session by discussing the Dhamma talk or speech that I delivered at the recent international seminar on life management with meditation at Bangkok. Okay, now you can start your meditation. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness that you have developed. Then learn how to stabilize all this silent mind. The mind that is trained is very beautiful. It listens to you. You want it to be silent, it will be silent. You want it to be peaceful, it will be peaceful. You want to use it for whatever you can. You want it to contemplate, reflect, think, and do whatever. You can use it. That is a beautiful mind that has been trained. Whereas the mind that is not trained, think a lot, very heedless, very difficult for you to make use of. And the mind that is not trained does not have the wisdom, the clarity to see things as they are. And because of that, the lack of wisdom will make you heedless, will cause your mind to be restless, agitated, constantly thinking, wondering off, get entangled with a lot of things that arise within your mind. Every moment of sense or consciousness or sense experience, you cannot understand what is going on. You don't even know that you have arise a consciousness because you are only interested in the thought, in talking to yourself, in getting entangled with what the mind tells you. So all this you will start to understand when I explain to you clearly how you can develop the understanding of your mind. And through the understanding, you will understand who you are, what you are. Then you will know all this while what is going on and who is the one living your life. You never really live. You existed through life. You are conscious most of the time, but you are hardly aware within. And you hardly understand what the form and mind is, what this human being is all about. And because of that, you find it very difficult to understand the Buddha Dharma. If you cannot understand his teaching, how can you develop the cultivation of it and practice? That's why everything you do need understanding. So tonight, he gave us a very good condition to share this understanding. So this come about because last week or so, about 10 days ago or 11 days ago, we were invited to this international seminar on life management with meditation held in Bangkok. This was a seminar co-organized by the World Buddhist University, WBS, the World Fellowship of Buddhists, WFB, and the Mindfulness Center. They call it the Pipalivarana Mindfulness Center, or PMC. For those who just came in, take a copy of the notes. We are about to discuss this note, because this will give you a very good understanding of what the Buddha's teaching is all about, and how it can help you understand not only life, understand clearly who you are, what you are, and from there you will start to understand life clearly. Okay, for those who have the notes, if you don't have, you put up your hand, you can get a copy from Brother Suyan. Everybody got a copy? Okay, you turn to page 3 first. Turn to the seminar proper. So this one was a talk delivered by me on the 10th of October, sorry, 10th of August, at that seminar held in Bangkok. So this was the soft copy that I had, so we printed it out. Then the condition come about because at first I only intended for those who are serious about the practice or the cultivation. So when I was in Bangkok, I only copied to a few practitioners who can understand and are quite serious. Then the feedback came back from one of them, very good. Then I realized, hey, if she can understand this, because she is so new, she is only about 2 years plus into the thing, and such a lady can understand, then maybe the rest can also understand. So that's why I decided to share this paper. Then I realized from the feedback, even when I was there, a lot of them came and talked to me. He said, you make the teaching so easy to understand and so clear. And he said, if you have not outlined it this way, until today they still don't know that the Buddha's teaching is so wonderful and so beautiful and so meaningful. And it does explain life so clearly, yeah, and so beautifully. So that was the feedback that I received and the joy. And many of them asked for a copy of the talk. So that's why, after considering all this, then I said, okay, if it can help make things clear and maybe develop the clear understanding, then it will help your cultivation and the meditation. Otherwise, I realized after so long, many of you are still not clear of the cultivation, because maybe you only listen, you got no black and white to read, nothing for you to fall back to. That's why it's very difficult for you to grasp. Then every week you come, even let's say you're very consistent, only 2 hours, and out of the 2 hours, you meditate for about half an hour. The balance is only about 1 hour plus. Then by the time you go back, you heedless for another 7 days. Then the next 7 days, you come back. So you don't really learn unless you are the serious type. So this present a very good condition for the Dhamma to be put in words. Normally I cannot write on. I go and give talk, you know, I never write on. I just speak from wherever I am, from the heart. But this one, because it was an international seminar, somehow manager tell me I better prepare something, otherwise things can go wrong. So because of certain condition, I forced myself to do this, because they gave us enough time. So I reflected, contemplated, then I remember the pointers that people wrote to me for me to recall what I said. Then I wrote them. Yeah. So this came about because of that. Yeah. So now, yeah, you can sit on a chair. Yeah. Yes, because if it's not comfortable, you will not be able to concentrate. So don't worry about your posture. Yeah. If you cannot sit on the floor, don't force yourself. If you cannot cross your leg, sit on a stool or a chair. That's why meditation is about understanding. You come here not to torture yourself unnecessarily. You deal with understanding. Okay, now we go into this talk proper. International Seminar on Life Management with Meditation, Experience and Success by the various speakers. This seminar was co-organized by the World Fellowship of Buddhists, the World Buddhist University, and the Papalivarana Mindfulness Center. The topic that I spoke on, like I explained just now, is about success in life via meditation following the Dhamma way by a Malaysian speaker. The opening statement and introduction to the topic, because this one is very important. I need to introduce people to the topic proper. So I will just read to you the formal greetings and all those things. Dear Mr. President, distinguished guests, fellow honorable panel speakers, seminar participants, ladies and gentlemen, a very good afternoon to all. That time was supposed to be lunchtime, but we are here at night, evening. It is indeed an honor to be given the opportunity to share my humble little experience on success in life management via meditation with you all on such an appropriate occasion such as today's international seminar. Today's seminar topic is about experience and success in life management via benefits of meditation following the Dhamma way. And this is a very important topic for us all to understand if we want to realize our highest human potential. Such a seminar can be of great benefits for us to develop the understanding of life so that we can all cope with the great intricacies and challenges of life that are much needed nowadays, especially so in our modern society where everything is moving at such a fast pace and life can be very stressful, hectic, demanding, and at times highly competitive, provocative, and seemingly harsh too. Human suffering are very real and is happening almost everywhere, even to the youngsters nowadays. To be successful in life management, we need to understand what is life. Otherwise, we do not know how to live. Yeah? True or not? Yeah. As Buddhists, we are indeed very fortunate. You listen to this carefully, how blessed you are, and yet you never appreciate what the Buddha has given you. You never really cherish it or treasure it. As Buddhists, we are indeed very fortunate and blessed because of the great wisdom and enlightenment of Lord Buddha. The Buddha is so unique and wise that he was able to summarize to us all of his understanding of life, both the mundane and the supramundane aspect, into just four noble truths, which are the essence of his great teaching. They are called the Noble Truth or Aryan Truth because they are truths that can make you noble ones if you can understand them. Noble ones are enlightened ones, and they are very noble in all aspects of their life. They are very noble in their understanding of life, for they have the right views with regards to the laws that govern all of life and existence. They are also very noble in the way they conduct themselves via their right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. They are incapable of negativity. So because of that, these noble ones or enlightened ones, they are a blessing to all. These four noble truths are so special and unique because understanding them can make such a big difference to our life. It is like we had finally understood the secret of life. And because of that, we will know how to truly live the noble life of great peace, love, joy, and happiness meaningfully. The Buddha realized that there are certain rather harsh reality in life that can make living being really miserable, especially the realities of birth and death leading to the whole mess of suffering or misery. He said there is a first noble truth of suffering or dukkha that explains clearly to us the prevalence of suffering in this world, caused by the eight realities of life and existence, that all living beings, not only human beings, even to all the animals, the non-humans, the devas, and all those higher beings, if they live long enough, will have to confront while going through life. Irrespective of your wealth, status, and materialistic success in life, one would still suffer if one had not developed the requisite spiritual understanding before confronting them. These eight types of First Noble Truth reality are, I think most of you have heard this before, but how deep do you understand this reality? This reality is what the Buddha said. It is common to all humanity and living beings, not only to you alone, understand? Everyone must confront them. So when you confront them, do not become miserable. Do not become fearful. Because you are not alone in this. This is a universal reality, understand? A common reality to all humanity. You like it or you don't like it, you have to confront them if you live long enough. So the first four is very easy to understand. The Buddha said you have to confront birth, old age, sickness, and death. And without wisdom, it can lead to suffering. This teaching we have gone through before. A lot of people may ask, But your birth is a happy occasion. We look forward to the new moon, the full moon, and all the joy of having our first baby. Why do the Buddha say it is suffering? This is a very good question, isn't it? Where you only look at the positive side, yeah? The happy side. But you never experience what this birth is. That's why you cannot understand. You are the mother, you will know. And you have confronted life long enough. You have heard in the newspaper, you have heard your friends, your relative, or even people whom you come into contact with or interact with. Actually, there is a lot of suffering that comes with birth. The moment you are born, what happened? Yeah? The baby that is delivered, what do they do? They cry. Is it a happy occasion? Then when the mother carry the baby for maybe 7 to 10 months, if it's miscarriage or premature birth, maybe 6-7 months. Yeah. Then if it's too full, maybe 10 months, 9 to 10 months. During the first 2 months or what, those who are mother before, they know. Yeah, there's a lot of morning sickness. Then your mobility, you had to restrain yourself in your food intake. You had to look after your own movement. Then there are a lot of things that can go wrong when you are going through the pregnancy. Then the birth process is not easy, even though you got cesarean surgery to help. In the olden days, it's all hand-delivered, understand? Sometimes nobody to help you, no midwife at all. But they have to go through all this. Then the suffering that follow birth is tremendous. Wherever there is birth, the Buddha said, you have to confront old age, sickness and death. That reality cannot run, understand not? All of the other aspects of life will have to be confronted one by one as you go through life. So birth itself, when you understand, can lead to a lot of suffering. Then when there is complication in the birth process, when the life of the child and the mother is at maybe threatened, and if the doctor come out and ask you that question, who do you want to save? I tell you, that is the most difficult question you ever have in your life. Of course, you tell the doctor both. The doctor say you cannot, only one. So there are a lot of this type of situation. Then old age, we look at our grandparents or parents, and sometimes our neighbors or people whom we know. As you go through aging, your body deteriorates, become very fragile, very weak. A lot of sickness follow. Your senses start to fail you. You become like very useless. Understand? Then you think back your younger days. You have attachment to those moments. Yeah. So old age nowadays is not easy to go through if you don't have money and support. Then sometimes if you have this style, what they call it what? That you forget and I don't know what that word you use. Alzheimer or whatever. Actually, that can be very frightening, you know. And I have seen them. I got one neighbor, my mother told me, I didn't know. We were very good neighbor, and she lived until very long. I do. Like my mother reached the age of 89, but she, I think, also 80 plus. But at the age of 70 plus, she got this thing wrong. And the daughter-in-law and the children find it very difficult to look after her. She can just walk out of the house without any dress at that age. Then she go out, she cannot remember where she stay, don't know how to come back. She will just sit there and cry. Yeah. And a lot of other things, and all the new things she cannot remember. Only the old thing they can remember. Yeah. Then they have a lot of other type of health related, senses related type of problem. So these are realities that you need to confront if you live long enough. The other very traumatic one is disease or sickness. Nowadays, Subang Jaya famous. Cancer cases a lot. The traumatic type of disease also you heard of it. Even like heart attack, stroke, HIV, kidney failure. These are very traumatic type of disease. Especially cancer. Yeah. So when you are confronted with this health problem, it's not easy for most people. Yeah? Unless you have the wisdom. Then death, of course, is very, very easy to understand. Death of a loved one. Death of the sole breadwinner. Death of a friend. Somebody very close, very special to you. Death of a partner. So these are very traumatic. Then the Buddha said, there is the fifth condition, separation from loved one and one's possession, like your wealth, property, possession, business, and things that you hold on to dearly, etc., can also lead to a lot of suffering. Then, if you live life long enough, you will confront people whom you don't like, and that can also become miserable, suffering. Then, the seventh one is, when you are not able to get what you want, or when things don't go your way and your expectations in life are not met, you can become afflicted and miserable too. Then finally, the Buddha said, in short, this is a very important final summary of the first number two. He said, the five aggregates of grasping, born of your self-delusion or Sakkaya Ditti, is dukkha. I had to explain a bit, this five aggregate. The Buddha say as a human being or a living being, we have a physical body, we have a mind, okay? He break this human being into the five aggregate of form and mind. Nama, rupa. Nama is mind, rupa is form. So form aspect is the physical body, the first aspect. You have a physical body, is it? A physical form. Then you have a consciousness which has this ability to make you conscious, to make you think, to make you feel, perceive, and come out with all the views and opinion and all the mental states. So he break this mind into four more aggregates. If you want to understand what the mind is, you just look into these four things. The Buddha said you inquire and ask yourself, what can your mind do? And then you understand why he break it down that way. He said your mind has this power to feel. The first aggregate is feeling, Vedana. Then your mind has this ability to perceive and know things through what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. Then your mind has this ability to think, to arise thought, to become emotional, to have all the feeling, the mental states within. Then you can also have mental formation, mental activity. Then all your planning, scheming, cunningness, deceitfulness, all of your mind state, they are all within this aggregate of Sankara. Everything that your mind can do, including feeling and perception, is Sankara, the content of consciousness. Then lastly is that your mind can become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And consciousness is a very important aggregate within you. Otherwise you cannot know the world. The way you interact with the world and know the world is through this consciousness, through this mind. Without mind, you cannot. And they are able to arise because you have the physical body that has the sense basis. That's why the Buddha said upon contact of mind with the sense basis, the respective consciousness will arise. So when your organ is the eye, you can become conscious of what you see. And this is how you know the world, how you perceive the world, and how you interact with the world. That's why the human body is very useful. Together with the mind, the consciousness, it animates into a human being, and you have to know what this thing is. And the Buddha's final summary is, he said, if you deludedly believe that this is you, if you attach to the aggregates of form and mind, suffering will be the result. You don't have to believe it. You find out yourself, you meditate, and you realize how profound he is, how wise he is. That's why that final summary is what the meditation is all about. When you can really insight into this five aggregate of form and mind and realize that they are not you, they are impermanent, the moment you hold and grasp, suffering will be the result. Because you want things your way. The five aggregate follow a set of nature's law that governs life and existence. It will not follow your way. It will go the way of nature. But if you have the wisdom to understand this law, then you can arise the causes and conditions for it to go your way. Yeah. How successful you are depends on your understanding. That's why you need wisdom to live life. Yeah. So this is a very important aspect that you need to understand. So the second aspect of the five aggregate is the mental five aggregate, the Buddha said. Not only as a human being. He said every moment of sense experience, there is the five aggregate. So just now we already knew the Buddha explained the four aggregate of mind. Then how does the form enter the mind? Yeah. All of the external reality, external phenomena, or the external form, how do you come to perceive them? How do they enter your mind and create the world, the phenomenal world? The Buddha says it's because you have this power of perception. Perception brings the external form into the mind, like the Buddha image. You see, you perceive it through your memory, then it enters. The mind is the knowing element. Everything that the mind comes to know is the form in the mind. And that is the rupa, the mental rupa, that you take in through your aggregate of perception. That's why when he talked about the dependent origination, the 12 link, or the paticca-samuppada, he's talking about this five mental aggregate. He's not talking about this human being. This human being occurs only once in a lifetime. So the Buddha is less interested in that. So we will go through, then you will understand later. Huh? So now I continue. When one confronts this reality without the requisite wisdom, then one will be afflicted and suffering like sorrow, lamentation, angry, fear, worry, anxiety, leading to depression, etc., will be the end result. In modern days terminology, we call them the problems of life. You can replace the First Noble Truth, reality, as problems of life. Like disease and sickness, we use the word health problem. When you mention health problem, people can relate better, understand? When you talk about birth, old age, sickness and death, don't talk to me, this type of thing. But when you talk about health problem, they are conscious, understand? Because they experience it. They see their parents having it, their grandparents having it. Then as they grow old, they themselves have it. So health problem, they are very concerned. That's why Sui An sent out a lot of health advice to you all through the Kalyanamita, my Kalyanamita sharing. So this health problem, they can easily connect to cancer, heart attack, HIV, stroke, kidney failure, etc. Then sudden death due to accident, traumatic disease, or nature's disaster like tsunami, earthquake, flood, building collapse, etc. Then nowadays you have career-related problems, like stress and sexual harassment problem and all those things. Then when you are with people whom you don't like, especially when you deal with difficult bosses that are not easy to be with, they can harass you and put fear in you. That's why management by fear and harassment is the trademark of a lot of CEO nowadays, because they want to squeeze every dollar out of your salary that they pay you. So this has become a very stressful type of environment for most young people nowadays. Even older people, they are not free from that, because they have target for you. Every year you deliver, they give you a higher target. successful then they expect you to deliver. When you cannot, they change CEO. Very easy. We are willing to pay. But is it worthwhile to stress yourself until you lost your health, lost your life? And that is the question you ask yourself. You work for what? That we will go through later, if we have time. Then you have financial problem. When you cannot get what you want. Relationship problem like divorce, forced separation, etc. Then nowadays you got the added social and crime related problems. When you are with people whom you don't like, etc. The younger generation can relate to this terminology better. So the first Noble Truth talk about what? The realities of life and existence. True or not? Everything about life is covered there. The mundane living. Because the final summary will include the rest. The five aggregate of form and mind. You constantly arise and attach. You cling on to it. You created your own reality. That's why everything becomes so real to you. And you get yourself entangled into almost everything that your thought tell you. That your consciousness create for you to hold on to believe. Then you call this your problem. Then you try to solve them. Okay, we go on. Then according to the Buddha, there is the second Noble Truth that explained to us clearly the cause behind all this suffering or misery. The Buddha says it's namely craving born of yourself, delusion or sakayadity. Means you think this is you, the human being. That is the biggest delusion. The main one that caused you all your suffering. You know why or not? When you believe you are real, what happened? That this human being is you, which most people cannot relate. They definitely say, this is me. Why you say not me? Yes, I want to walk, I walk. I want to run, I run. I want to do anything I can. I want to commit suicide, also can. Why you say not me? So because of that, you create an identity for yourself, correct or not? Then what happened? You become egoic. You become selfish, correct or not? That's how the evil root comes to be. Then you can become emotional, angry, envy, jealousy, fearful, full of sorrow, anxiety, grief, lamentation, everything. This is what the evil roots is all about. Greed, hatred, and delusion. So it all comes from this sakayadity, self-delusion. But when you develop the understanding through the meditation to know that they are all karmically conditioned for you to use, there is no being inside there. He know you, he know me. Oh, then it becomes totally different. I use it to live life. I don't have to worry about life. Like this body. It's like a car to take me around. And with the senses, it helped me to arise consciousness to live life. That's it. I use it. Means what? Like the car. It damaged, accident, I send it to a mechanic. I don't have to worry about this body getting old, getting sick and die, correct or not? Because I understand they are only element, no reality, it cannot be me. Then likewise, I reflect, contemplate and meditate on the aggregates of mind. Are they really me? Every feeling that arises in this form of mind, every perception, every thought, every emotion and every consciousness that arises, is it me? If it's me, when that feeling arises and pass away, did I die? I didn't die. Then how can it be me? So the question is, if it's not you, then how come it constantly arises in you? Then who are you? What are you? And this is what meditation is all about. That's why 30, 40 years ago when I started doing the cultivation, I keep on probing. I keep on going into all this. And I finally realized what this is. Exactly like what the Buddha explained. And it's so beautiful. After that, no more problem. No more mystery. You know how to live. Because you understand what this thing is. And you are no longer deluded. So this is the most beautiful part of his teaching. So the Buddha said, When we had understood what suffering is and the cause behind the arising, we will know how to retrospectively manage our life better. Correct? When you understand what suffering is and the cause behind, if you still so foolishly allow it to happen, then that is your choice. Understand? Because you choose to be deluded. If I know why I suffer, I will definitely know how to mitigate it. I will not allow that delusion to carry through. So what the Buddha wants you to do is, he said, when you understand that there is a noble truth that talk about this suffering, and there is a cause behind all this suffering, if you can understand the cause, then suffering need not be. Correct or not? Correct or not? If you don't know how you get entangled, of course, you got no way out. Understand? Or? But now, with the teaching, you understand why you get yourself in trouble because of sakayadity and delusion and ignorance, then you definitely know that there is a solution. And that solution depends on how diligent you are to develop the cultivation. That's why the Buddha said, there is a third noble truth that talks about the possibility of enlightenment in the here and the now, leading to the cessation of all suffering. And this is most reassuring, because the Buddha says suffering need not be when you have the wisdom, requisite understanding to confront life. The Buddha not only tells us that enlightenment in the here and the now is possible, he even explained to us clearly how it can be done via his fourth noble truth. He said there is a path, namely the Noble Eightfold Path. If cultivated, will lead to the cessation of all suffering, which is the ultimate aim of all Buddhist cultivation. Which means this Noble Eightfold Path is the meditation and solution to all of our life problems. So there is a way to free and liberate our mind from all suffering. This is what most of us will be very interested in. Granted. So now you know. The next step is what? Cultivate. Do it. With this Dhamma understanding, we need not have to worry about life anymore. We can just live life to the fullest via wisdom born of this Dhamma cultivation and the meditation as taught by our Lord Buddha. We can then experience all of the beauties and wonders of life from moment to moment via a serene mind in heedfulness. So when you can do this, you are the most blessed and happy person in this world. Understand? I was indeed very blessed and lucky, because this Buddhist meditation with its great benefit had helped me so much. Not only in my study during the early years, but later on in my career and daily life too. The benefits of this type of meditation are many. You can see on the banner and the whiteboard here. I listed only six. These are the core benefits. But the spin-off from there is a lot. The first obvious benefit is inner peace, leading to inner well-being of body and mind. Because when you have inner peace, the energy is very good. And it will lead to inner well-being. Understand not? As opposed to what? Your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow and your lamentation. All these are very negative, very eerie type of energy. Understand not? Whereas the inner peace energy is very soothing, very peaceful, very calming, very rejuvenating. Because without thought, you conserve a lot of energy. Thought take up a lot of mental energy. That's why after you think a lot of work, you feel very tired. You need to rest, you need to eat, you need to sleep. And those who study in the university or even from 5, from 6, you will know. During those times when we study, we eat a lot yet cannot be fed on. You take a lot of egg also. The mental energy just consume it all. So actually, thinking take up a lot of mental energy. You will come to realize that. That's why after you come out to work, you put on a lower weight. You are no more mugging. No more forcing yourself to study anymore. You can take life easy. Yeah? Unless your work is very stressful. Then it's a different matter. So this inner peace is very important. The first obvious benefit is inner peace leading to inner well-being of body and mind. Nowadays, peace is very difficult to come by for most people unless they know how to train their mind. Correct or not? When you have problem, you find it so difficult to become peaceful. Eh? Some people cannot even sleep. True or not? Insomnia. And they just don't know what to do. They stay up whole day because they hold on to their thought, the problems of life. Then they have a lot of problem. Do you know when your body is so stressed out, so tired and so miserable, and yet you cannot have enough sleep to recuperate, you know how torturing and how miserable that guy is. That's why they can make them very depressed and even think of committing suicide. That's why they have to see doctors, psychiatrists, give them medication and all those things. So I read on. So in time of suffering, like fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, etc., born of health and other life-related problems, this meditative inner peace leading to inner well-being can really help to provide immediate temporary relief to their mental suffering. This inner peace leading to the inner well-being is a very positive calmness energy that can help boost their immune system as opposed to the rather negative energy of fear, worry, anxiety, and sadness. The question that is frequently asked is, why are most human beings not peaceful most of the time? This is the question you must ask. Because when you come and meditate, how come you cannot make yourself peaceful? So why are they not able to meditate to develop the meditative mind of inner peace leading to inner well-being? According to Lord Buddha, it is because of the five mental hindrances that he called pancha nivarana. That's why I always go around these few essential dhamma in the meditation class. You remember? We first talk about the five mental hindrances. And this is what the Buddha means. When you have this throughout the day, it hinders your mind from becoming peaceful. But this is what you do whole life, throughout the day. That's why you are heedless. When the hindrances are there, you are heedless. You lack spiritual faculty. You didn't cultivate your spiritual life. The spiritual faculty is the opposite five that will counter the hindrance. So I read on, you will know. The five hindrances are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, which is sleepiness or lethargic mind, restlessness of mind, and doubt. And to overcome them, the Buddha said, we need to cultivate the opposite five spiritual faculty or pancha indriyas. They are sadha or confidence in the Buddha and his teaching. We are understanding how special he is and how wonderful his teaching is. So when you have confidence or sadha, you got no more doubt, isn't it? Then you got no more restlessness. Then virya. Virya is a spiritual zeal or tenacity to follow his teaching, to cultivate his teaching. So when you have a lot of virya, you will not be sleepy. It counters sleepiness, lethargic mind. Then sati or mindfulness is awareness before the knowing, without thought. So when you can be mindful without thought, aware, you are very peaceful. You are very calm. No thought means what? No fear, no worry, no anxiety, no this, no that. Still, quiet, peaceful. So mindfulness is very important. This is a very important quality. That's why meditation is about mindfulness, awareness. Not about the thought. Then leading to samadhi, the collected mind or unwavering mind, which is a very stable mindfulness. Then when you have sati and samadhi, there is clarity. Then you can see things as they are. That's why wisdom will arise. Wisdom born of direct seeing. This is where we start our meditation. Cultivate the five spiritual faculty to prepare our mind to receive his great teaching. And the hindrance will go away. So this is very clear. Right? Your hindrance come from the first two and the fourth. And sometimes the fifth. The first two is throughout the day you do, throughout the day you experience them. Sensual desire, you will, like I always explain. Every time you become conscious through your sense, the consciousness, when you become conscious of what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think, what do? You always react, isn't it? to the pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, your like and your dislike, your fear and your craving and your desire. So what happened? You are never peaceful. You oscillate between these two duality. Either you like that sense experience, then got lost in it and preoccupied with that sense experience. That's why you are no longer with the moment in silent awareness to see things as they are, to understand the reality, to understand what is going on. Where your mind can only do one thing at a time. If it's preoccupied with your thought, what happened? You are lost in thought. The thinking will condition your feeling, emotion, and your reaction. That's why when you react, things that you like, you crave for, you desire it, sensual desire come to be. You cling on to the pleasant sense experience. You want it to be repeated. You don't want it to be taken away. The one that you don't like, you develop the aversion, the anger, the dislike. You want to push it away. So your mind always oscillates. That's why it's never peaceful. It don't have equanimity. It cannot stay silent and peaceful. It cannot accept things as they are. It always wants to react. They say kipo. Very, very kipo. Everything also wants to comment and react. So, whenever you do this, you create this hindrance in you. And you do it throughout the day, what happens? Every moment of sense experience. It becomes habitual. Isn't it? When it becomes habitual, it means automatic. Yeah? No need to learn anymore. That's why when your wife says something, you just angry and raise your voice. Told you not to do it. Because it has become automatic. Habitual. So all this anger, hatred, fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow and lamentation, emotional negativity and selfish has become a habit in you. How can you become peaceful? Because they are hindrance. And when you do this so often, it becomes a habitual tendency. That's why throughout the day, you think a lot, you worry a lot. You have this emotion inside you fluctuating. You oscillate between all this duality of life. And you become entangled without understanding. Then if you don't understand the importance of this teaching and this meditation, when you sit and meditate, you become sleepy. Like you attend a class that you got no interest in. So sleepiness, lethargic mind, sloth and torpor is part of your lack of understanding. Then when you have problems in life, what happens? When you have problems, you worry about that problem. Right? Your fear, worry, anxiety make you what? Restless. Unhappy. That's why you got no peace. Your fear, worry, anxiety will cause the fourth hindrance to arise. Restless. When your mind is restless, it cannot be peaceful. You want to meditate, but it keep on coming back and haunt you, that problem. Keep on recalling. Because to you, it's unresolved. It has to be resolved. Especially financial problem, relationship problem, career-related problem, health problem. It can be very serious. So all this is the reality of the first noble truth. And when it hit, it can be dead serious, I tell you. So develop this urgency to cultivate so that you can have the requisite understanding before you confront them, so that you are not afflicted, so that you know how to liberate your mind and free. So make haste in cultivating the five spiritual faculties, and these are not difficult. If you follow the teaching, it's very easy to do. That's why our puja already set you in motion to develop the faith in the Buddha and his teaching. You pay respect, you recall to mind his greatness, how special he is and how wonderful his teaching is. And all this will bring about the faith and the virya. Then if you really pay respect mindfully, you start to develop the cultivation. Then you come here and train your mind to be mindful. Then you stabilize it. Then that mind is capable of meditating. Then that mind can meditate. That's why that is the silent mind. Stable sati that you need moment to moment to live life. And when you use that stable mind that you have trained in awareness or mindfulness to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, that becomes heedfulness or apamada. So heedfulness is key. Yeah? We read on, you will understand. So the Buddha also exalted before his parinibbana. He advised all the monks or his disciples to strive on with heedfulness and do not be heedless. That is apamadena sampadita. And this is followed by the Dhammapada verse 21 that states, heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful never die, whereas the heedless are as if dead. You must pay great attention to this Dhammapada verse, which also stress on the importance of training the mind to be heedful, which is to be ever mindful and constantly meditative, following Dhammapada verse 23. Constantly meditative means constantly cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Ever mindful means very stable mindfulness, day to day, moment to moment. Dhammapada verse 23, you go and read out, it's in the notes, and I have mentioned it many times. That is precisely the reason why Buddhist meditation is also called mindfulness or heedfulness meditation, referring to the four foundations of mindfulness: Kaya Nupassana, Vedana Nupassana, Chitta Nupassana, and Dhamma Nupassana. First, it trains the mind to be silent with inner awareness. Pay attention. This one is very important. So that it can be mindful from moment to moment in daily life to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path, leading to heedfulness. That's why heedfulness got two parts. A stable mindfulness, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. You combine these two, you will develop apamada or heedfulness needed to understand life. This mindfulness or heedfulness will allow you to see clearly how your five aggregate of form and mind, the mental five aggregate, arise in you. How thought and feeling arise in you with every moment of sense experience or sense to consciousness. And how they condition each other. That is how your thought condition your feeling. Then feeling condition your emotion or craving. Due to your wrong view or wrong thought, to grasp and cling onto the external phenomenal world created by the aggregates of mind. This is heedless living, leading to all the suffering following Dhammapada verse 1. You remember Dhammapada verse 1? The Buddha said, your mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is chief. Everything arises when mind arises. So you must know your mind is very important. Understand? Because this is the forerunner of all things. The Buddha said, if you are heedless, if you don't care about your life, if you don't want to do something about your mind, if you don't want to train it, what happened? Then you will act, speak, and think with a heedless mind that is not trained. And such a being is it, because you are heedless, you will constantly arise the evil roots of greed or selfishness, hatred, and delusion. Then suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hood. You don't have to believe him. Every time you get angry, every time you are selfish, every time you got delusion, like fear, worry, anxiety, you go and check whether you suffer or not. That's why you are heedless. You are as if dead, spiritually dead. Means your life miserable. You will suffer without understanding. So this is a very important Dhammapada verse. Whereas the heedful silent mind with inner awareness will bring about inner peace and inner well-being of body and mind, as opposed to the heedless mind that is full of thought, fear, worry, and anxiety, conditioned by the hindrance of mind, leading to the agitated and restless mind that is never peaceful. Understand not? Whereas if you are heedful, you have the spiritual faculty, then you don't have the hindrance. That's why you are very composed, very calm, very peaceful. That's why you can meditate. You can develop the understanding. Then you have clarity. When you have mindfulness and samadhi, you have clarity. And because of that, you can see things clearly. Then you can understand what is going on. Then you can have the understanding to understand life. So with this inner awareness, inner peace and inner well-being, there is clarity of mind that can enable us to see things as they are, leading to penetrative insight and wisdom needed for us to truly understand life. This meditative wisdom can also lead to enlightenment in the here and the now, thereby enabling us to live the noble life that is free from all mental suffering and misery. Once mind is liberated and no longer deluded, then life takes a turn and becomes not only meaningful, but also very wonderful and beautiful indeed. One can then experience all of the beauties and wonders of life from moment to moment with full clarity of mind to truly live life to the fullest. This is beautiful, isn't it? Yeah? That's why you must determine to be heedful and you are home. It's so easy. No need to worry about other things. But to be heedful is not easy. You have to train your mind to be ever mindful. Then use it to meditate. This is heedful living, following Dhammapada verse 2, as opposed to heedless living that leads to all the suffering and misery in life, following Dhammapada verse 1. Suffering are all mind-made, the Buddha said. If mind does not deludedly cling onto the five aggregate of form and mind, or the human being, as the me and the I and the mind, then there is no more suffering. Then clarity of mind can also allow us to make better decisions in life, enabling us to resolve issues or problems wisely and amicably. One can also concentrate and study better and have very good and easy sleep. No more problem with insomnia and sleep-related issue. It can also allow us to plan and do our work more efficiently, thereby helping us in our career life. Yeah. With all this benefit, we can really be a blessing to all. Our daily life will be very different because the mind is always heedful and peaceful. This will bring us to the understanding of another very important aspect of living life. Huh? This one you must pay attention, eh? Importance of mindfulness of present moment awareness. As we all understand, life can be correlated to existence. To live life is to go through existence, and existence is time-related. True or not? Huh? The whole spectrum of time can be defined and divided into the three periods of time. That is the past, present, and the future. Of these three, we should inquire deep into it and find out for ourselves which is the reality. Obviously, the past is already gone, so no more a reality. Similarly, future yet to come, so also not a reality. Hence, only the present moment, which is the highest in life. And this is the only reality within existence. This is also the reason why people nowadays emphasize a lot on the power of now. Even Eckhart Tolle wrote a book on it, and it had become one of the bestsellers for many years. Therefore, the most important question about life that we all need to inquire deep into is, moment to moment life passes by, and this is the only reality. What are you doing within each and every of this moment? You go and find out. This is meditation. Without heedfulness, without moment to moment awareness, you cannot understand. Yeah, you cannot live the moment. The moment, split second gone, and you are busy what? Thinking, planning, and worrying about life. You never leave. Understand? Huh? So remember, the Buddha always tell the bhikkhu, be heedful, be vigilant, because if you are heedless, you are as if dead, following Dhammapada verse 21. That is spiritually dead. No more chance for enlightenment or liberation of mind. Our mind and our thought move so fast with every moment of sense or consciousness. And if we are not mindful and heedful within the moment, then how can we cope with life? Correct or not? Your thought moves so fast. Most of us may know that the moment is the only reality and very important. But the question is, are we mindful of the moment? You think a lot. And you are so heedless, you are hardly ever mindful. The problem with the world today is most human beings are heedless and they are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so they totally miss out on life, for they never really live life. They only existed through life. And there's a big difference between living and existing through life. Eh? That is, they are conscious of life, but they are never mindful of life. Means they never really live. So this part is very important. But they are not mindfully living life. Their mind is always preoccupied with the thinking and the thought, which will continue to delude them to cling onto the external phenomenal world as very real. Their thoughts will project into the future to arise the fear, worry, and anxiety, hence creating a false reality for you to cling onto. True or not? We already identify the future yet to come, not a reality. But how come your thought can project into the future and make you fearful? Your deadline. And of all the horrible things that will happen. Like last time, they say end of the world, 2012. A lot of people were so panicky. Why? It's just a thought. How come it has such power to make you so miserable? That's why you must ask yourself. Likewise, the mind will recall the hurtful or unhappy past to remind you of the scars of memory, hence triggering off the sorrow and lamentation of the unhappy past again. Not able to see, there are three characteristics of nature, namely impermanence, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature. They will continue to hold and cling on to the external phenomenal world. And this is the cause of all their suffering and life problem. Why can't they just silence their mind in heedfulness to be with the moment, to experience all of the pristine beauty and wonders of life? Just like the Zen saying, drinking a cup of Chinese tea is zazen or meditation. Because within that moment, there is just a pure awareness of the reality in the here and the now. And there is no thought. No thought means what? No past and future. Understand or not? And there is no thought. So no fear, no worry, no anxiety or whatsoever. But just a silent mind in peace and stillness to live and experience all of the wonderful moments with clarity of mind and body instead of worrying about life. A lot of people, while eating, they worry. While walking, they worry. While sitting down, they worry. Because human being is very funny. They got so much thing to worry about. Not only your own problem. The first noble true reality for yourself is another health problem, financial problem, career. They later on worry about their children, then their grandchildren, their marriage, their relationship, their finance. Then they worry about all the small things. Their property. What happened to this? What happened to that? Their thought keep on proliferating. Understand? And like everything is a problem. They must think about it. They must worry about it. So as your child grow up, when they are young, you worry so much. You sacrifice so much. As they grow up, you worry more. Then you worry about they get into trouble if they mix with the wrong group and the wrong people. Then you worry about their future, their marriage, then how they will grow up, because you worry about them not able to survive on their own, become independent on their own. So you have this unnecessary fear and worry. That's why you attach to so many things. That is so real to you. Okay. Why do you need to worry about life? Because of fear, right? Even if you worry, you are not going to solve. Sorry, you need to ask this question. Even if you worry, you are not going to solve your problem, because worry alone cannot solve your problem, is it? It will instead create more thinking, leading to more fear and restlessness of mind. As long as you are not mindful, this heedless thinking will continue to create more delusion in you because you do not have the wise attention or yoniso manasikara at the moment of sense experience. This can only come after you have developed the wisdom, the meditation. And when you have this, every moment you are peaceful. No more problem. Your feeling becomes pure feeling. You just experience that moment. It will not condition craving. It will not cause you all the fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation. You will not react anymore. You have the wisdom to accept things as they are. You have the wisdom to see things as they are. People is just the way they are. The world is just the way they are. So you become very peaceful, very serene. And you can come to terms with all things that happen. This is precisely the reason why we need to train our mind to be heedful, so that it is constantly meditative and ever mindful to insight into the truth, which is everywhere. In the midst of life and nature, truth or the characteristics of nature is everywhere. Why can't we see? For those who see, they always see. Even though the present moment is the highest in life, but in order to transcend life, which is to transcend birth and death, we need to transcend even the present moment, correct or not? To realize the timeless Dhamma or Akaliko, which is beyond thought and beyond time. So this is the ultimate goal of all Buddhist meditation. That's why you have to transcend even the present moment, the pure awareness. The whole form of mind must cease. Otherwise you cannot realize the unconditioned, which is Nibbana. Understanding the nature's law that governs life like that. This one is very important. This one is very scientific. And this shows to you the great wisdom of Lord Buddha. To be successful in life management, we need to understand another very important aspect of life. That is the laws that governs life and existence. According to Lord Buddha, this universe of ours is very unique. First, there is nature. And then there are nature's law that governs all of life and existence within this universe of ours. He called it the Pancha Niyamas, or five universal order of nature. The first two nature's law, Uttu Niyama, or nature's physical law, and Bija Niyama, or nature's biological order, are scientific law. Whereas the other three are spiritual law, namely law of karma, karma niyama, or law of the mind, chitta niyama, and law of the Dhamma that the Buddha has shared with us, Dhamma niyama. It was we are clearly understanding these two great scientific law of Uttu Niyama and Bija Niyama that the scientists are able to progress so far, so fast in the field of science and technology to become so advanced today. Nature's physical law governs the behavior of physical things. They refer to the law of physics and chemistry, etc., that the scientists have developed. Then Bija Niyama is nature's biological order that governs the behaviors of all organic and biological things within the field of biology, genetic engineering, etc. Like our human body, the plant, the animal, the fishes, etc., they are all governed by this law. So similarly, we have a clear understanding of these three great spiritual law of karma, law of the mind, and law of Dhamma, or the truth. The Buddha was able to excel himself in the spiritual field to understand life so clearly and so completely, thus becoming the Sammasambuddha or fully enlightened one. It was through his perfection of the understanding of these three great spiritual laws that enabled him to proclaim the Dhamma that he had taught us. Take for example the first spiritual law of karma as the first right view to understand life. In the five daily contemplation, as taught by the Buddha said, we must contemplate daily the following. That this body of ours is of the nature to decay and grow old, for it has not gone beyond old age and decay. That this body of ours is of the nature to get sick and be diseased, for it has not gone beyond disease and sickness. That this body of ours is of the nature to die one day, for it has not gone beyond death. Then all that is mine, beloved and pleasing, will change and vanish, following nature's condition. They are all conditioned arising, dependent originating. Then the last one is most important. We are all born our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma, and we are what we are because of our karma. The first four contemplations allow us to develop the contemplative wisdom to deal with most of the first noble truth, reality of life and existence, whereas the fifth contemplation deals with the right view with regards to law of karma. So karma, which is moral causation, is most important, right? For we are born of it, heir to it, conditioned and supported by it, and we are what we are because of it. So what must we do? Because if karma plays such a major role in your life, what must you do? You ask yourself. We must take care of our karma, right? How do we do it? We must train our mind to be ever mindful and heedful via meditation to enable us to see all of our mental intention or jatena behind all our actions, speech and thought process, thereby enabling us to avoid all evil, cultivate goodness, and meditate to develop the requisite wisdom so as not to become deluded anymore. These are precisely the advice of our Buddha stated in the famous Dhammapada verse 183. All evil is to be avoided. Cultivate goodness and wholesomeness, then purify your mind. And these are the advice of all Buddhas. The Pali version you have heard before, Sabba papassa akaranam, kusalesa upasambadan, sacitta pariyotapanam, etang buddhana sasana. So this is a very famous Buddha's Dhammapada saying. How do we avoid all evil? The Buddha recommends keeping the minimum five precepts. Because people who violate the precept are evil people with the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. This one you can check. Like the first precept, killing, causing harm to fellow living being. Who will do that? Angry person, karena, deluded person, greedy or selfish person. That's why the three evil roots are all there. Then how to cultivate goodness and blessing? The Buddha recommends cultivate the noble eightfold path factor of right view, leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. So this was how the Buddha's subsequent teaching comes about. And through this understanding, one will like understand the secret of life, thus enabling one to truly live life meaningfully. Then there is also Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 that talks about happiness and suffering in life. This can be elaborated on if time permits. So this one I have told you all many times. You hold the key to your own life destiny, remember? To be happy or to be miserable is an entire decision. So choose to be happy. Why do you choose to become miserable? Because you don't know this teaching. You get entangled with the first noble truth reality without understanding why you suffer. Now that you understand what this is, if you somehow choose to become heedless and allow this to happen to you, I don't know what to say about you. Understand or not? You ask yourself, is that really stupid or not? Stupidity. That is true delusion. After you have understood this, yet you allow yourself to be like that. Means you are not serious about life. You totally don't understand life. You are really heedless. Okay, we go on. Then we have citta niyama, nature's law that governs the working of the mind. This one is most important. This one is meditation. But I don't have the time. I just summarize everything here because it was supposed to be a 1 hour talk. Under this second spiritual law of nature, the Buddha taught us the paticca samuppada or the law of dependent origin or dwelling that explain to you how your mind functions and works. The Buddha said everything that arises is all dependent originating and that there is no such thing as a permanent unchanging soul or entity or an atta that is responsible for our thinking, seeing, hearing, etc. For the Buddha said, in the seeing, there is only the seeing consciousness, and there is no one to see. Like the physics experiment, remember? When you on the switch, the battery, in order, the bulb, then it lights up. The lighting up is like you become conscious. Yeah? So, everything happens naturally. Nature's law, scientific law, physical law. But our human body has a biological input. So biological order together with the physical law and the consciousness mind trigger off the consciousness that arise. For in the seeing there is only the seeing consciousness and there is no one to see. So and all of the phenomena, whether physical, mental or nature's phenomena, they are all conditioned arising or causal phenomena phenomena, following nature's law. And because of that, they are all impermanent. For dependent on condition, they arise. You will see this all in the meditation, and will continue to exist if the supporting conditions are there, are still there. But they will cease to be once any of the conditions that supported their arising cease to be. Just like my voice, if I continue to speak, it continues to vibrate. You got your ear, you will pick it up through your hearing consciousness. But what happens if I stop? No more perception, no more hearing, no more consciousness. All phenomena is just like that. Understand? If I don't speak, no vibration, your eardrum don't receive, no contact, no hearing consciousness. But you deludedly think you hear, understand? That's why you get yourself attached. You associate with the seeing and the hearing. I see, I hear, therefore I am. Then you exist. That's how sakkāditti take hold of you. Okay, we continue. But they will cease to be once any other condition that supported their arising cease to be. And because they are impermanent, following nature's law, you cannot want things your way, otherwise suffering will be the result. And because they are impermanent, it's not a permanent and changing entity that we can hold on to or cling on to as the I and the me. Hence, anatta or non-self nature or empty nature of this so-called human being, or the five aggregates of form and mind. If we cling and hold on to them, then it is self-delusion or sakkāditti, wrong view, leading to the suffering. Then the third spiritual law is Dhamma-niyama, which is the essential teaching or Dhamma or truth that the Buddha has taught us. And the most important one is the Four Noble Truths, which is the essence of his teaching that we had already covered. So that part is already, in the beginning I covered already. Okay, meaning and purpose of life. This is very interesting. Once we have understood the nature's law that governs life and existence, then we will know how to prepare ourselves to live our life meaningfully. Correct or not? You know the five great order, law of nature. Without this understanding, we cannot contemplate its true meaning and purpose. To different people, life has different meaning and purpose. Hence, it varies from person to person. But as a Buddhist, we are indeed much more fortunate because the Buddha was able to explain to us the secret of life via his enlightenment. The other reason being, they don't quite understand life like us because they don't have the Four Noble Truth teaching. So for people who are quite poor, the meaning and purpose of life is just a three meal of food and shelter over their head, following Maslow's need hierarchy. But for us, Buddhists, we will go deep into life to pursue the sole purpose of liberation from birth and death or enlightenment in the here and the now, so that all suffering can cease, leading to the noble life of a noble one. Because we understand the danger of delusion and ignorance, leading to heedlessness. Then there are two important aspects of life. First, there is the mundane or materialistic aspect of life within the existential world or conditioned world, followed by the supramundane or spiritual aspect of life that can be realized only after gaining the enlightenment. Most people are only concerned with the mundane aspect of life because to them this is more important. Not knowing that without the spiritual understanding, life is still incomplete and suffering can still arise despite the materialistic wealth and success. This was clearly explained by the Buddha in his proclamation of the First Noble Truth, where he talked about the eight universal reality of life and existence that can lead to suffering and misery if one were to confront them without the requisite wisdom. This was also precisely the reason why the Buddha-to-be then left the palace in search for truth to liberate himself from the three signs of old age, sickness and death that he saw prior to his renunciation then. Okay, now we talk about materialistic success within the mundane life. Normally refers to these five things. When you are young, you go to school. you go to university, you study. If you are lucky, you can get academic success, yeah, when you are young. So this one maybe about 10% of those who are diligent can get it. Then career success, when you work very hard. Yeah. When you come out to work, if you are determined, you can also be the top 5 to 10% yeah, that make it to your career. Of course, financial freedom also same. Yeah, maybe the top 2, 3% yeah, to make you feel secure in life. Then with financial freedom, you think of early retirement to do the things that we want to do or like to do. Then the last one is to have a understanding good and happy family unit leading to relationship success. The first 4 types of success can be realized by most people who are determined and hardworking. But the 5th one is more difficult to achieve because it needs some form of wisdom and understanding. Let's say you are able to achieve all of the above materialistic success, but is your life really complete and are you really happy and safe? What happens when you are confronted with the first noble truth realities of life and existence? The Buddha said when you confront them without the requisite wisdom, you will be afflicted. And suffering will be the result, as explained earlier on. Hence, one still needs to cultivate the requisite spiritual understanding to complement one's life. Otherwise, this first noble truth life's reality can still afflict you. So it's up to you. If you don't want to free, then you go and entangle yourself. But if you're really serious about life, you can do it. Yeah? The other thing that I want to point out is, when we talk about career, it doesn't mean your work. Like certain athletes, they dream to become world champion or what. They work towards their talent. That is also part of their career. Okay, the final conclusion. My present life in this world was indeed rather blessed. For I not only excel in my academic field, I also reached the pinnacle of my civil engineering career life. And this one I really, really become very happy when I was able to do all this. Why I say I reached the pinnacle? Because everything that a civil engineer can do, all of the design and all those prestigious or great projects, I was able to cover during my career period. And was involved in many, many of these major projects too, even from small to... Then I worked with all the renowned architects in the world, even Malaysia. Then I even able to give presentation until the PM's department for very big privatization project and all those things. Then I find it very interesting because it's very complete. And I did a lot of design and I see it through from inception to completion. And this is something not everybody can do. So I really went through every sector that the civil engineer can experience. I was a contractor, then I worked for the government, worked for statutory body, I worked for consultant, then I worked for a public listed company. Then I went all over. So that was how I say I reached the pinnacle of my civil engineering career. I was also able to achieve my financial freedom quite early too, and this has enabled me to retire officially from my engineering career like 12 plus years ago at the age of 47, to do the thing that I love to do, like sharing the Dhamma and helping people. So financial freedom for me, I was lucky because my 2 children never go overseas, so I don't have to plan for the big money. So that's why I retired immediately after my daughter graduated. Simple life, no need to worry about life, just to live, enough money, EPF also enough. I was also blessed with a very good family unit, with a lot of love and understanding among ourselves. My relationship with all my loved ones, friends and colleagues are generally very cordial and good too. Last but not least, I was also blessed with a fairly good past that had enabled me to have the requisite spiritual understanding to complement my materialistic success in life. Over the last 20 plus years, since 1989, I was able to make use of my spiritual understanding and my own personal success in life management to help many people who had affinity with this nature of mine to cope with their life's problem. With this, I will end my today's talk. And thank you so much for your patient and kind attention. Okay? So hopefully you all can benefit. So now we still got 12 minutes to discuss. 30 minutes. I will read through Joy's comment. This is very good. You turn the first page. At the bottom, the last email, dated 15th of August, Joyce wrote to me, "Dear Bradio, after having read your talk at World Buddhist University, the first thing that struck my mind was, how can we not see the connection and the link of the five aggregates of form and mind within the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path and the Dependent Origination or Dwelling and the Five Universal Law, especially the law of karma, which you have consistently talked about. The content of this talk is most profound for me, and now seeing with more clarity allow me to realize why a very stable sati is so important. And I guess in a conditioned world, the five sense doors are just too much to fathom on the unreality of it all. Understand? When you have that profound Dhamma, when you realize it, the Buddha said everything is empty, not real. You sure won't believe on. Where everything appears so real to you, the world, the consciousness, all of existence, everything that you come to perceive and experience. That's why you have emotion and feeling. They are so real. Yeah. Then all this reality actually is born of your own delusion. They are never real. Yeah. Real according to what your thought tell you. Yeah. For those who have penetrated the Dhamma, they will know. That's why Joyce came to understand, is it? The five sense doors are just too much to fathom on the unreality of it all. I remember asking a question when I was in Bohi Monastery in Melbourne 2 years ago, and she was there, and at that time she was very new to the Dhamma. How can we stop our thought, he asked the two monks, which seems to make quantum leap at all times, and before we know it, the thought has already made a story out of our own delusion. And these two monks are very famous monks. She only came to know much later. You know who are the two monks, not? Ajahn Kayano and Ajahn Anand. Ajahn Anand is Ajahn Achalo's famous teacher. And he's very famous. This trip we went to his monastery. His monastery was beautiful, very serene, very peaceful, and very beautifully built. Very nice. And the people there, the monks, they are all beautiful. So that's why all this doesn't happen by accident, because of her cultivation, the past. That's why she able to have all this encounter and the imprint that she had at that time. He said, the answers are here. We only need to be mindful from moment to moment. Yes, this is the answer. Otherwise, you cannot cope with life. Your mind, split second. He said, quantum leap is very true. You know, what the Buddha said? He said, one thought moment, within a second, billions of consciousness can arise in your mind. Isn't that quantum leap? You may think, how can? I think also 1 second already. That is your thought. When it comes to consciousness, it's different. Consciousness is the oneness. Simultaneously, it can move very fast. If only you understand what your true nature is. The thought is but only a very small aspect of your mind. Very, very small aspect of your mind. And that is the one that caused you to come and go in samsara. That is responsible for your birth and death. To understand better, one needs to be able to connect all of this to the three universal characteristics, which we hold, cling, and grasp dearly, which ultimately keep us in the samsaric world of suffering. See, that time she already knew. Thus, a solid foundation in the five spiritual faculty, especially wisdom, panya, daily devotional practice, and bhavana, to gain insight into the truth with understanding and wisdom, will be the only sure way towards liberation. Yes, the five spiritual faculty, you must cultivate them and develop wisdom from there. Then your daily religious routine and devotional practice, yeah, and your meditation to gain insight into the universal characteristic. I truly appreciate the effort and time that you have put in to give an overall view of the Dhamma. Each time I read again, I tend to understand it with better clarity. The Dhamma is like that. When you understand better, you read again, you can unfold the deeper meaning. Before you have that understanding, you cannot see the deeper meaning. That's why this Dhamma is for people of all levels of cultivation. More importantly for me, according to Joyce, to be able to connect the link better, which is where my weakness is, and to stay with the moment as much as possible, and to see things as they are. This is what you have to do. You have to train your mind until it's so stable, moment to moment, ever mindful. Otherwise, you cannot see. To gain and benefit from the content of this talk, one has to walk the spiritual path, and this is very true. Not only walk, with mindfulness, heedfulness, and diligence, with conviction and faith, without a doubt, this talk will be of immense benefit to those who have heard and read it. And this will be my checklist, my constant checklist in my spiritual journey. I truly rejoice with you and thank you for sending this email to me. Greatly appreciated this wonderful sharing. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessing of the Triple Gem keeps you safe, healthy, and happy always. So this is what she wrote. So because of that, that's why I circulate to you all. Then I wrote back to her. I said, thank you so much for your below feedback. And since you are also able to benefit so much from the talk, I had therefore decided to forward my above recent talk, which is cut and paste as below, for sharing with Kayanamitas, so that they may also benefit from it. So that was the condition. Otherwise, you all don't receive. You all should thank Joyce. Because for me, I would rather keep it if people cannot understand. Otherwise, it becomes what they call hindrance to them. But if people can benefit, then there is condition for it to unfold. Then I will know. The condition will arise. Then I will do something. Otherwise, for me, whether I send or I don't send, it doesn't make any difference, because there is no living being, actually. But because there is still existence, there is still affinity, there is still the world, you just let things be. That's why everything must have condition to arise. Those who understand, they accord and flow. They don't have a desire to do anything. They may have some very sincere aspiration, but as they move along, even the aspiration also will cease to be. Then after that, she replies, yes, it's a great idea and it will definitely benefit our Kayanamitta in some way or other. It will be very useful as reference or footnote to reaffirm the teaching and the links for clarification too, on the profound teaching of Lord Buddha. And this is very true, because so far you all don't have a written copy. That's why you listen and listen and listen, you cannot get head or tail, except the serious one, those that have the diligence to cultivate on their own, to map it out. Then for most people, I think you need something tangible. So I hope you all go back, read through and understand. Okay, we got 5 minutes. I just finished off this three turning of the Four Noble Truths. Then maybe we can end. Huh? Then next Thursday, if you got any question, you prepare them. Then I will have the usual meditation. Then you can ask. Because today, we just have enough time to go through the paper. Yeah? Then I just wrap this up. You look at the top there. Three turnings of the Four Noble Truths. Huh? Last time I gave you all that notes. Email compilation. Huh? It's all written there. The Buddha talked about this three turning of the Four Noble Truths in the first sermon of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta. It's all in the notes there, the appendix. He said, even for him, himself, the Bodhisattva to be at that time, as long as he had not understood this Four Noble Truths in his three turning, because there are four truths, he turned it three times, four times three is 12 mode. He cannot proclaim to be the enlightened one. So this tree turning is the basis of cultivation. You have to do it. Even the Buddha to be also did it. So first turning is Suttamaya Panya. Panya is wisdom. Sutta is the discourse of the Buddha. So during the olden days, if you hear the Sutta of the Buddha, then you can develop the wisdom and awaken to it. And this first turning, wisdom, will arise. That's why it's called Suttamaya Panya. After hearing the Sutta, the wisdom come to be, like Kondanya and Sariputta. This one you can only do it if your past cultivation is very strong. You listen to the truth, you awaken, like Huineng, Six Patriarch. Otherwise, you had to go for the second turning. The Buddha said, second turning, you had to reflect, contemplate, and inquire into all the noble truth that he has proclaimed, that he has actually given through his discourse. When you start to inquire, reflect, and contemplate, what happened? You start to stabilize what you have heard, nowadays including what you have read, and start to assimilate them in. And that will form another type of wisdom. And this wisdom will stabilize. It will prepare the base for you to receive subsequent truth. That's why the second turning wisdom is wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into all the essential Dhamma or truth that the Buddha has spoken. Then the third turning is always about wisdom born of meditation. Bhavana is meditation, the meditative discipline. Bhavana Maya Panya, wisdom born of bhavana or meditative training. And this one will lead to the enlightenment, awakening. So second turning, the Buddha emphasized on the Four Noble Truths differently. Under the second turning, he just gave you this inquiry or question. He said, the first Noble Truth, second turning, this Noble Truth of suffering is to be understood. You have to inquire, why did the Buddha say that? And how can I understand? Then you will go into it. Then you will inquire, what is this five aggregate of form and mind which the Buddha talked about? How can I put to test if I attach and cling and deludedly grasp onto it? Suffering will be the result. Upadana kanda, the five aggregates of grasping. So to do that, you have to understand what are these five aggregates. Then only you can put to test and investigate. So all this comes from the inquiry, second turning wisdom. Then the second noble truth, the Buddha said, there is a cause behind all suffering. And the cause is craving, born of delusion. And this craving is to be abandoned, the Buddha said. And then you inquire, why did the Buddha say I must abandon? If I don't abandon, it will cause me suffering, correct? Or not? So that is the answer. So the next question is what? Inquiry. How can I abandon it? Then you go into the teaching. What is craving? The three types of craving. And how to do it? The five ways to abandon unwholesome thought or wrong thought. So all these are in the teaching. Then the third noble truth, he said, this noble truth that talks about the possibility of enlightenment, cessation of all suffering, which is nibbana, is to be realized. Why must you realize it? Otherwise, you cannot know what the enlightenment is, understand? And how can I realize that? Noble Eightfold Path. That's how you cultivate. Then when it comes to Noble Eightfold Path, the second turning, the Buddha said, this Noble Eightfold Path is to be cultivated. understanding is not enough. I know, but I cannot do. That's why you have to cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path. All the eight path factors, starting with right view, leading to all the right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, and all the right effort, for right effort, then all the right sati, samadhi. So when you do all those, then it is complete. So the three turning is very useful. Yeah? Then it tie up with the teaching. These three, pariyati, patipati, and pativeda, I already explained just now. Yeah? You can see them in all the Buddhist logo, yeah? Those early days, the traditional orthodox tradition. You will see them. This is how the Buddha teaches it. When you start, you do pariyati. The Buddha said pariyati is the learning of the doctrine. You learn the teaching through what? Last time only hearing the sutta. Now you can read, you can on the video, CD. So you are more blessed. So pariyati is the learning of the doctrine. After you learn, the Buddha said, you must move into the cultivation, which is patipati. In Thailand, it's called patipada. Patipati is the cultivation of the doctrine after you have understood what the teaching is. That's why without understanding, you cannot do, you cannot start. That's why it's in that order. Then when you start to cultivate, the teaching becomes clear, understand? Become comprehensible. Then you start to realize the fruition of it. That's why the third stage is Pativeda. When you have realized the fruition of it, the fruit of cultivation you will reap. Then with that understanding and the enlightenment, the awakening, the nature's law will reward you back. You will be free from all suffering. You will have no more delusion. You will know what this form and mind is, and you will know how to use it to live life to the fullest, to experience all the wonder and beauty of life. Then you will know what the moment and moment, moment to moment consciousness is all about. Then you know what sati is. Then you know what the spiritual faculty is. They were so beautiful, so different from the hindrance. Then your mind is incapable of mistake anymore. This is what the beautiful teaching of Lord Buddha is all about. So with this, we end. Huh? Okay? So, sadhu, I rejoice. So, we will do the sharing of merits, transfer of merits, then you make your aspiration. Huh? Yes. Oh, okay. Can. Huh? In fact, we can share with all beings who can receive them. Huh? Because there is one part where you chant, Idang menya tinang ho tu, sukita hontu nyatayo. I have included the other part. I always read to you all, may this wholesomeness be shared by all the departed relatives and those who can receive them. So it will include all those who get, I think, killed or died during the Genting bus tragedy. I think quite a number. Out of the 50 over, it seems they said 37. They somehow, you see, death or separation can occur any time. Don't think you got a lot of time. That's why the Buddha always say contemplation on death, marana anusati, so that you realize the urgency. Things can just happen like that. And you cannot say, oh, wait till I retire, wait till my children grow up, then after that, wait till my grandchildren grow up. By then, you yourself cannot grow up. That's why they say, time and tide. Wait for no man. The reality is, form and mind, segmented life, it has its own limit. Understand? You cannot, like a candle, when it is going to blow off, you never know. You think your candle so long, it will burn. Halfway, the wind comes, gone. even the wind don't come. Sometimes the manufacturing defect, burn halfway the week of water, cha-cha-cha-cha-cha, die. Then sometimes too much heat, the weather too hot, all the wax melt. Then all the wick, like very soft, again, the fire go. So life is like that. Don't think that the candle so long, you will live that long. That's why you see a lot of people dying very young. So, okay, we will invoke. Yes. Yes. Oh, okay. Oh. I see you. Okay, was the baby delivered? They didn't do cesarean or what? Okay. So, what is the name? Okay, we'll try to help. Sister. Ong Bilian. Oh, he is Ong Bilian. My wife's classmate is Ong Bilian, I think. Yeah, but this is Bilian, another one. Okay, whatever it is, we recall to mind, we all compose our mind, I lead you to do all this. You recall to mind all the wholesomeness that we have all done while here for the last 2 hours plus. We have the puja, we compose our mind, we did the reverential salutation, then we chant. All this merits that we have accumulated through sharing of the Dhamma, straightening our views, rejoicing, and also all of the wholesomeness that we all have developed. And now, including all the sharing of merit, transfer of merits that we are going to do, may we invoke the power of all these merits. Through our rejoicing first, we say sadhu, sadhu 3 times. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So by the power of all this wholesomeness and merits that we have all cultivated over the last 2 hours or so, may it arise the causes and conditions for our sister Ong Bilian to recover from her whatever complication. May she gain back her good life. Then may she recover to good health as soon as possible. Then for all those who die at the Genting tragedy, because if they have passed away, we can only share and transfer whatever merits possible. But they must have the condition to receive them. So we will do the sharing of merit, transfer of merit. We will include them all. So now I will do the sharing of merits with the devas. Then after that, we will do the sharing of merits with all the departed ones and those who can receive them. Okay. For those who have the handbook, you can turn to page 68. Share your merits with the devas. Akasata cha bhavata devanaka mahindika punyang tang anumoditva chirang rakantu loka sasana. May all beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share these merits and may they long protect the dispensation. Itta vata cha mehi sampadan punya sampadan Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. May all beings share these merits which we have thus acquired, and may all devas rejoice, and may it contribute greatly to their well-being and happiness. Okay, transfer merits to departed one and all those who can receive them, including all those that died at the Genting tragedy recently. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyateyo. Idang me nyatinang hotu sukita hontu nyateyo. idam minya tinang hotu sukita hontunya tayo. Let these merits that we have all cultivated over the last 2 hour plus session accrue to our departed relatives, and may they all too be well and happy. And let these merits also accrue to all those who can receive them, especially those who pass away at the recent Genting tragedy. And may they all too be well and happy too. May they have a better future birth. Okay, we invoke the blessing for the nation. Devo vasatakalena sasa sampatihito cha fito bhavatu loko cha raja bhavatu dhammiko. May the rain fall in due season. May there be a rich and good harvest throughout. May the world be prosperous and peaceful always. May the government of the day, the king and the rulers, be righteous. Okay, we make aspiration. Ipmina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo otu yawa nivana patya. By the grace of these merits that we have thus acquired, may we never follow the foolish, but only the wise and the enlightened one until Nibbana is realized. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, thank you. And pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, the Devayana.